Our next presentation is by Jonathan Lundgren, Diverse Cropping Systems That Promote Beneficial Insects.
Well, hello there, everybody. Good to see you. I'm John Lundgren. I work for USDA ARS in Brookings, South Dakota. I'm going to be talking a little bit about today about diverse cropping systems that promote beneficial insects, especially the role of diversity in promoting biological control and ecosystem services within cropland. This is actually a partner of a talk I gave yesterday, which normally I would have flip-flopped them in a perfect world, but nevertheless, here we are. We're just going to go with this. Scott Fausti, he's an economist at South Dakota State, actually was really instrumental in a lot of this data. We've been partners on a number of studies over the years, so I want to acknowledge him for sure, and I'll acknowledge other colleagues and collaborators as I go through the talk here. Lots of little data pieces here, all mashed together. Okay, we hear a lot about biodiversity declines. This is not something that is just going on in the tropics. This is not something that is just going on with pollinators. This is a consistent reduction in many different taxa around the country, around the world, that we're experiencing right now. A confluence of events, terrestrial vertebrates, bats are starting to diminish, water birds we're starting to see populations decline, coral reefs, mangroves, farmland birds, pollinators. Biodiversity is in decline. A lot of that, I think, is in close association with the proliferation of food production on this planet. Currently, agroecosystems are arguably the largest biome on planet Earth. 40% of the terrestrial land surface of our planet is devoted to food production. That means that as we are starting to think about how to conserve biodiversity and how to conserve all of the services that biodiversity provides, if we are not involving cropland in that discussion, then we are missing a really important opportunity. But one aspect of agroecosystems and food production systems that often we forget is that even diversity within food production has declined. Soybeans is about the same in North America since 2007. I'll talk about why this data is important. Wheat has diminished in terms of area planted by 21%. Hay fields by 16%. Other crops by 16%. This is all published in this paper right here, and it's also confirmed by a very recent paper that was published by Aguiar et al. In PLOS One. But corn has increased by 14%, which is particularly important because corn currently occupies 30% of crop acres on this in this country. 5% of the terrestrial land surface of our country in North America here is devoted to this one plant species. And as this has increased since 2007, it has come at the expense of a lot of other crops that we used to produce, and still do produce, but just at a lesser rate. It really begs the question of how did we get here? Because I think that this is a really fundamental and important shift that we have seen over the last 8-9 years. I think that there's a number of different ideas and thoughts about how this came about. Me and Scott Fausti actually sat down and tried to plot out exactly what has gone on over the last, in terms of events and market forces that may have been driving this shift in producer behavior. And this has all been published, and it's a confluence of events. It's not just one event that we can tie this to, right? Or one decision. We have technology evolution. We have sociological values and how this has come to bear. We have market forces that are associated with this. And then we have behaviors of both the farmer and the consumers to produce this situation where we see large-scale shifts in land use over a very short amount of time. What are some of these decisions that have happened? I think the motivation or the opportunity for shifting by producers what their crop decisions are, came from the Freedom to Farm Act. And this allowed producers to change what crops they were producing in response to market forces, such that as things like corn prices may have gone up, farmers could then start dumping some of their land into that. Before that, they were constrained based on historical crop production practices. So that was the opportunity. Then the motivation for shifting to corn production or corn, more corn-dominated production practices came with ethanol mandates. This then set into, and we've got data that supports this. Scott is a whiz with numbers, and he's able to develop statistical models that actually start linking a lot of these then now circular events that end up proliferating what ultimately has become our agroecosystem. The evolution of technologies has been extremely important in terms of ethanol industry and the GM corn industry here as well. Indeed, we see what we call the convergence hypothesis, where we have a convergence of technology, and we'll just call them administrative actions or decisions that fostered crop production changes. So here we have years, BT corn acreage, versus corn grain used for ethanol. And we see this really close and tight relationship that has gone on. Because we cannot, as crop production changed, we end up taking crops out of other crops that were in the rotation, such that the only way that we're able to maintain that is through the use of genetically modified varieties. There are consequences. And not consequences that were plotted out or anything like that. But as these changes occurred, we start to see various effects on the landscape. Three colors on this graph. Corn is green. Soybeans are blue. Cotton is red. We see a simplification of our landscapes. This leads to reduced biodiversity and, I would argue, less resilience within our food production system. That's why people should care about landscape simplification. So as we go in there, as we start to see the simplification, it came to my attention, and as we start to realize that there's reductions in biodiversity across many different habitats, it came to my realization that we really need to start establishing baseline bioinventories within agroecosystems, because surprisingly, even though these are some of the most well-studied systems in terms of economics, but also, I mean, there's a lot of entomologists that have spent a lot of years looking at cropland. We really don't have a very firm bioinventory of any one particular crop. I think that's something that could be argued pretty strongly, pretty convincingly. One of the reasons for that is because it's a pain in the ass, right? It's a lot of work. You need to use consistent sampling procedures that are fairly comprehensive. You need to be doing this at multiple field sites over a wide region. But the value of the data at the end of the day, these aren't necessarily papers that are going to land in Science or Nature, right? These are things that are going to be so important. So important. So here you see what we'll often do when we're running these bioinventories. We'll send an entire crew out into a cornfield, and we'll do whole plant count samples on everything that's living on the plants. We'll suck up all the insects living on the soil within a unit area, and then we'll collect things within soil cores or use pitfall traps in order to try to aggregate and get as much of a bioinventory of a particular habitat as we could possibly get. But the importance of these bioinventories to cropland and understanding how our practices or how changes in, say, climates or changes in food production systems affect particular taxa or particular species or entire communities, man, it cannot be understated just how important that is. So we did this. We did this in corn. Here's South Dakota right here. This is where I live right now. We sampled these counties. 53 different farms in eastern South Dakota over 2010 and 2011. The farms had to be more than 10 acres in size. They had to be non-BT. We wanted to assess what species were living within the corn agroecosystem. So we didn't want to be killing them off with things like pesticides. That was actually ended up being virtually impossible because almost all of the corn acreage received neonicotinoid seed treatments. You cannot avoid this in corn production system. So we ended up going with fields that seemed to have a lower rate, and then we sampled during anthesis when the insect community is by far and away most diverse. And hopefully those insecticides were out of the plants as much as possible. What did we find? We found 107 insect species, insects being anything with more than four legs and less than two legs, just in the corn canopy alone. That's a lot of species diversity on these 53 farms. Of these, 7% were primary pests. These are being primary pests, being things that we advise farmers on what to do about, right? Go out, kill this thing. But none of them, even though these were untreated fields, they were non-BT, none of these primary pests were at economically threatening levels. So farmers were making decisions as far as investing substantial sums of money in terms of prophylactic pest management, and it was providing them no economic benefit. 13% were other herbivores. I call them neutral species. But by far and away, the most diverse groups of insects on these plants were predators. At the range of around 150,000 predators per acre in this corn canopy. These predators are being things like spiders. These are aureus insidiosus, little insidious flower bugs. These things are lace wings, lady beetles, things like that. What I came to realize as I was trying to tease out this hairball of a data set, right? Now we've got 107 different taxa from 53 different farms. Understanding what was going on in that corn agroecosystem becomes very difficult, right? As far as what is driving pest outbreaks or abundance within these farms. And what we realized, or I realized as I was looking at this, is that this is a biological network, right? You tug on one strand of this network, and it's affecting everything else, and even the pests that are out there. We tend to have a very pest-centric approach to managing pests in this country and abroad, right? Where we see an insect that we want to kill, and we make our decisions based only on the densities of that insect, forgetting that it's connected to everything else in that network. So we wanted to apply what we understand about biological networks to what's going on in the corn system. Our understanding of species networks in terms of community ecology primarily comes from simplified systems. We go out, we establish a mesocosm or something like this where we start plugging in species or taking out species, either herbivores or predators, and try to understand what happens to a focal species. This is actually really important in terms of understanding the mechanisms that are involved in deciding when and where pests are going on. But as you saw, there's 107 species living just in the corn canopy in half of my state. So the relevance of some of these becomes somewhat, although important, but questionable. And so I think that we really need to start understanding realistic levels of these biological communities. Here's a good example. So normally in the corn agroecosystem, I mean, you've got the corn plant. This is a food web, right? You've got a corn plant. You've got the European corn borer. And then the parasitoid wasp stings that little guy. And this lady beetle larva likes to eat that. But occasionally they'll eat each other, right? So this is quite a complicated web, right? This is what we found in terms of the interaction web within the corn agroecosystem. We have 107 different species, and if they statistically correlated with just Spearman abundance rank correlations with another species, we draw a link to them, right? That's complicated, right? This is across all of those 53 farms. It becomes a very complex network, And so tugging on, say, if this species is a pest, you pull that out, and it has implications for all of these other taxa that may be attached to it. So we started to look at this. We looked at all these different farms. These are the different farms, all the little dots. As species diversity increased on these farms, we found that pest densities started to decrease on those farms. And the evenness, that means that if an even community has a lot of taxa that are all about the same abundance, an uneven community has a few taxa that are dominating that community. As the evenness goes up, you start to see fewer pests within that community. As the evenness goes down, you see more pests. Networks. So we establish biological networks. This is one of the, so this is a network of essentially what you were seeing just all like mashed together. I have separated out the major components, and what we looked at is as we looked at the number of connections among species in terms of their abundance, we looked at how the pest abundance functioned within those same fields. So here you see an example of a network that had low pest abundance. You see a lot of connections. You see only a few of these taxa are completely unconnected to everybody else in that web. Now this is a network with high pest abundance. You see very few of these really complex clusters, right? And you see a lot more species that are completely disconnected. So what happens? So this is average degree. That's essentially a function of how many connections there are on that web. What happens is that the average degree and the connectivity within these networks is negatively correlated with pest abundance, such that if you have high connectivity, right up here, you have very low pest abundance. And if you have low connectivity and the number of connections within that species or within that community, you see high pest abundance. What does this mean? This means that it's not just the number of taxa within a particular community that tends to drive when and where pests are becoming problematic within cropland, but what it means is that the balance of those species and the interactions among those species become extremely important in influencing when and where populations are occurring. And inherent in that is that our decisions in what we're doing on a particular piece of land affects the diversity and affects our necessity for managing pests on that farmland. So factors that increase biodiversity, practices that increase biodiversity will reduce pest abundance, and factors that decrease biodiversity will increase pest abundance. Bottom line, folks, is that pests are not the problem. And if we're only focusing on the pests and slapping a Band-Aid on the pest problems with an insecticide or with even a biocontrol agent, then we're curing a symptom. But until we realize the essential problem, we aren't going to get ahead of the insects. We're always going to be reacting to these pest populations. What is the problem? The problem is a lack of diversity and too much disturbance in our cropland. So why is biodiversity important? Biodiversity provides services, and it performs functions that we don't understand, but we cannot replace with technology in the long term. This is not my opinion. This is backed up time and again throughout history. Okay, so we've got a lot of corn data. I presented some of it yesterday. Claire Bestel presented some really great stuff yesterday. It was great. You guys really missed it if you didn't see it. Kelton's going to talk about this, using these networks in corn systems as a risk assessment tool. So very interesting talk this afternoon, and Dr. Chrissy Mogren is going to be talking about what the implications of pest management within these cornfields have on pollinator populations, and that'll be a talk tomorrow. Folks, I would not be here if I did not have the best goddamn lab group in the entire world, okay? These guys make it so much fun coming into work every day. Yes, here's my email address. Many thanks to everybody, and thanks to you all for having me here and coming up.